Hello, everyone. Hello. We are in the middle of our introduction to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, and we're really having the general introduction to the writings of the Chafetz Chaim. And we're in the middle of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's fascinating development of his yesod called Toras HaGolos, the Torah of how to survive, the special Torah of how to survive when you're in Golos, when you're in the outside world. And just to review briefly, because we're going to be building on what we said last week and continuing, Rabbi Yaakov develops the idea, you know, the Torah stays the same, the Torah is perfect, but the curriculum's going to change based on the student body, and based on, there might be different emphases, based on who the student body is. And Rabbi Yaakov develops, that was the difference between the yeshiva that Avraham Yitzchak had versus the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver. In Shem Ve'Aver, they were the survivors from the Dor HaMabul. They developed, well, we'll see, they got it from somewhere, but they used and applied Toras HaGolos. And Yaakov Avinu, when he was heading to Laban's house, needed the Toras HaGolos of Shem Ve'Aver. Avraham and Yitzchak, they had an empire, they had a yeshiva totally cut off from the outside world, and they learned regular, ordinary Torah without a special emphasis of how to survive when you're involved in the outside world and interconnected with the outside world. Because when you came to Avraham Yitzchak's yeshiva, you were cut off from the outside world. Your own little, you had your own their own empire, like a big yeshiva outside the city. Oh, so that was Toras HaGolos. It went from Shem Ve'Aver down to Yaakov, and then we developed how it went from Yaakov. He taught it to Yosef. Yaakov understood that somehow that Yosef would be the one who would lead Am Yisrael into Golos. He might be there by himself. I explained, quoting from Rebbe Kamenetsky through his son, that Rachel was the primary wife. That's what the Medrash says. Akar is Ikar, the primary wife. And therefore, Yaakov assumed and understood that the Mesorah and the heading down to Mitzrayim or heading into Golos would go through the children of Rachel. And therefore, he taught Yosef Toras HaGolos. Now, there's a question which people have raised about this topic of Toras HaGolos. I've received this question several times, which is, you know, Avraham Avinu, also L'chora, should have, at first glance, he should have developed Toras HaGolos. Avraham Avinu was a survivor by himself against the whole outside world. He was the only person who believed in Hashem, and he smashed the idols. So, what's the idea exactly that Avraham, apparently in his yeshiva, the Rabbi Yaakov develops, did not apply and use and develop Toras HaGolos, but while Shem Ve'Aver did? So the answer is that Avraham Avinu, if you read the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, it's very interesting. The Rambam describes Avraham Avinu's career and what he did, you know, in his normal day. He spread monotheism from town to town, from city to city. And the Rambam describes that Avraham was very successful. You know, basically wherever he went, he transformed everyone around him. And suddenly, and wherever he went, he had dozens and hundreds. The Rambam says that Avraham Avinu had tens of thousands of followers. You know, the Torah describes that the Goyim described Avraham, Nesi Elokim Atah B'Socheinu. He was like a leader. Avraham Avinu was so successful in spreading monotheism, in his kiyuv, in spreading monotheism, that he, you know, it was almost like an immediate transformation. And then he had his big yeshiva. He came to learn an Avraham yeshiva with his empire of tens of thousands of followers. In contrast to that, you don't find any sources that Shem Ve'Aver's yeshiva developed and expanded and they had an empire. Just the opposite. If you look over there in the Rambam, at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, if you look in the Mefarshim, there's a Kesef Mishnah, and the other Mefarshim, they describe that Shem Ve'Aver's yeshiva didn't spread, they didn't have so many Talmidim, and that's the impression one gets. So, although Avraham Avinu, in his own personal life, applied Toras HaGolos just for his own survival, but once he was so immediately, quickly successful in spreading Hashem's name, we'll read the Rambam there in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, transformed everyone around him, then he developed this yeshiva, this empire, and that's Rav Yaakov's idea that the yeshiva of Avraham and Yitzchak, they didn't use Toras HaGolos, but Dafka, the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver, they did. Okay. So that's what we've seen till now. Toras HaGolos from Shem Ve'Aver down to Yaakov, down to Yosef. Okay. So now let's go further. Rav Yaakov has a vort here, a beautiful vort. It's on page 3 of the source sheets. It's source number 5. It's where the Torah describes when Yaakov finds out, here he's called Yisroel, that Yosef is still alive. So the pasuk there reads in Perek Mem Hei, pasuk Kaf Ches, Vayomer Yisroel Rav, O Yosef Benichai. And Yaakov says, Rav, Yosef is still alive. The word Rav is very striking. It's like, how does it fit in the flow of the psukim? So the Mefarshim discuss, what does it mean? A lot. The word Rav means a lot, harbe, many. How does it fit in the flow of the pasuk? Rav, O Yosef Benichai. So the Mefarshim discuss. So if Yaakov quotes a very interesting medrash here, it's a medrash from Bereishis Rabba, Parsha Tzadi Dalek. Rabbi Yaakov reads here as follows. It's underlined in source number 5. Vayomer Yisrael, Rav Kocho Shel Yosef Beni. The word Rav means stronger, better, greater. The strength of Yosef was greater than mine. What does this mean? Shekamat Saros Higiuhu. V'yadayinu omet b'tzidko. Harbe mimeni shechotosi shemarti nistor darki me'ashem. Etc. Adkan lashon ha-medrash. The medrash here is saying that Yaakov Avinu, fascinating, when he hears Yosef is alive, he's comparing Yosef's survival in Mitzrayim to his survival when he was with Lavan, in Lavan's home, for so many years. Yaakov is comparing Yosef's survival in Mitzrayim, how well he did in a Ruchniyah sense, to his own survival when he was in the house of Lavan. And he's saying, Rav, better, stronger, harbe, Yosef did better in Mitzrayim than I did in the house of Lavan. That Yosef remained a great tzaddik despite all of his sorrows, and Yaakov refers to, he said that he did a chait. So that's what's happening here. The word Rav is Yaakov comparing himself to Yosef and saying Yosef did better. Okay. So that's the medrash. That's one very beautiful pshat in the psukim, in the pasuk, the word Rav. The word Rav there is a strange word, a striking word. By the way, the word strange has two meanings. There's strange as in striking, it stands out, and strange as in weird. So when I use the word strange, the Torah is not weird. Baruch Hashem, the Torah, sometimes things are striking. So it's strange as in striking, as opposed to strange as in weird. I got this from my Rebbeim, and then later I heard many of my Rebbeim have Tumin of Rav Soloveitchik. And later I heard tapes, and apparently Rav Soloveitchik would use the word strange a lot. He would use the word strange, and he meant strange as in striking. So the word strange means strange as in striking, as opposed to strange as in weird. So this strange word, it means Yosef did better. Why? Look, that's the medrash. Why? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, why did Yosef do better than Yaakov? So Rav Yaakov gives a fascinating, creative answer. And he says, How did Yosef learn this to do better than Yaakov? He says here, it's all based on Torah's Hagolos. And it goes as follows. When did Yosef learn Torah's Hagolos? When he was a kid. Yaakov taught Yosef Torah's Hagolos at home. As we explained, Yaakov somehow understood that Yosef would be the one to lead us into Golos and be in Golos by himself. He taught him Torah's Hagolos when he was a youngster. When did Yaakov learn Torah's Hagolos? He was in middle age. He was 63 when he started learning, back then that's middle age. He was 63 when he started learning Torah's Hagolos by Shem Be'Aver. So Yaakov learned it as an older man, and Yosef learned it as a youngster. V'nimsa sheYaakov Avinu, I'm reading the underlined parts in source number 5. Lomad halachos elu bimei ziknuso v'yitzel Yosef atzarek haya begeder girsisa deyakasa. That's a phrase from the Gemara. Something which you learn, girsisa deyakasa, when you're a child. The Gemara says that whatever you learn when you're younger, it sticks in your head better. And you remember it much better, and it becomes more of a part of you. We know this. Many of us, if you have interesting niggins you learned when you were a child, they stick in your head and they're there for many, many years. So Rabbi Yaakov says that the pshat in this medrash, in the word Rav, when Yaakov Avinu says Yosef did better than I did in Mitzrayim, Yosef in Mitzrayim did better than I did by the house of Lavan, the pshat in the medrash is based on Torah Segalos. Yosef learned Torah Segalos as a youngster, So it was totally, he totally absorbed it. It became a part of him, and therefore he was very successful in applying Torah Segalus, and he stayed strong when he was in Mitzrayim, very strong. Yaakov learned Torah Segalus as an older man, therefore, although he was successful, but he himself says he wasn't as successful because it wasn't as much a part of him because he learned it as an older man. Beautiful shot of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, of Rav Yaakov, using Torah Segalus to explain the depth of that medrash. Okay. Good. Now, where did Shein Ve'Ever get it from? So if we have Shein Ve'Ever, Yaakov to Yosef. Where did Shein Ve'Ever get it from? Correct. From Noach. This is source number 6. This is the Emes of Yaakov in Parshas Noach. We know the Torah says Noach was a tzaddik hayo v'dorosav in his generation. Chazal have machlokes. The Rashi quotes. Is that an extra praise of Noach? Or it's lukanai of Noach? It's not a praise. What's the idea? Maybe Noach was a tzaddik only in his generation, but compared to Avram, wasn't such a great tzaddik. Or Noach was a tzaddik even in his generation, and he would have been even greater tzaddik in the generation of Avram Avinu. So let's take the Shita of Lishvach. It's a praise of Noach. So what's the praise? The praise is saying, despite the fact that his generation was so terrible and so difficult, it was the Dor HaMabul, Noach was survived. He was a big tzaddik. So Rabbi Yaakov says, that's Torah Segalus. Torah Segalus began with Noach. If you take the Pshat of Lishvach, this is where it begins. And he quotes the Medrash. It's in source number 6 here. This is the Medrash Rabba Parsha Lamed, B'derosav. Rabbi Nechemya Amar, U'ma'im B'derosav, Haya Tzadik, Ilu Haya B'doro Shal Moshe, O Shal Shmuel, Alachas Kam V'Kam. He would have been even a greater Tzadik. And the Medrash gives a mashal. Mashal Vitzluchi Shal Afar Simon, Mukefet Samit Pasil, Menachas Bein HaKvaros, V'yarecha Nodev, etc. The Medrash gives a mashal that you have a very beautiful smelling item, and it's in a container, and it's in a container inside a place that there's a bad smell all around. So what's the idea? That the beautiful smell remained. Since the container was closed up so tightly, it was totally sealed, that even though this container was in a foul smelling place, but the beautiful smell inside the container remained. And that's Noach. So the Medrash here is praising Noach, that he was in a generation that the Mashal was like a foul-smelling place, a terrible generation full of immorality, full of terrible things. And he closed himself up, and he found a way to keep the sweet smell and to stay strong, despite that all around him was a bad smell. That's Torah Segalus. Hainu, I'm reading from the Rabbi Yaakov again. Sheshamar ahalo, klomar hitzil es bonav es kalosav, shelo yigaru achar ador svivasam. Vizui gadlus ein dugmasa. That's the greatest godless. It's incomparable. Lahatzil es b'nei beso b'shah, b'shah shemi saviv lo, besa kfaros, ha-tumma v'kaz v'olo v'kaz v'yaradas. Tumma's all around, everywhere. And he kept his family strong. That's Noach. So Rabbi Yaakov says, yeah, that's Torah Segalus. And that's Noach, down to Shein Ve'Ever, down to Yaakov, down to Yosef. So it's mamash going through kimat all of Chumash Brachos. And now, it goes even one step further. This next vort, Rabbi Yaakov does not say, but this next vort is an idea that I heard in the name of Rav Salvatik, Tzatzal the Rav. I think others have said a similar idea, but I heard this in the name of the Rav. And it fits beautifully into the Yesod of Rabbi Yaakov. Who comes after Yosef? Of course, Menashe and Ephraim. Menashe and Ephraim were born and raised in Mitzrayim, literally in the den of iniquity, in the worst possible place. Back then, Mitzrayim was the worst, most immoral place. And Menashe and Ephraim were born and raised in Mitzrayim. And they became great tzaddikim. They became such great tzaddikim, they become two of the Shvatim. Unbelievable. Mamash, two of the Shvatim. They were the only of the Shvatim who were born and raised in such a horrible, terrible environment. How did it happen? Clearly, what's happening here is Torah Segalus. Yosef took the Torah Segalus that he learned from his father, from Shein Ve'Ever, from Noach, and he applied it in raising his kids, and he taught them how to stay strong in the middle of being raised in the middle of Mitzrayim. This is Torah Segalus. This is Menashe therefrom. Well, so if you take this, it's mamash unbelievable. Torah Segalus literally goes through Chumash Brachos from Brachos to Vayichli. From the end of Chumash Brachos, where we begin the career of Noah, from the end of Parsha Brachos, we begin the career of Noah, all the way through, weaving its way through all of Brachos down to Vayichli, Menashe, and Ephraim. This is one major theme of Chumash Brachos, Torah Segalus. Torah stays the same, the Torah is perfect, but the curriculum changes. This idea of the Torah staying the same, Rav Hirsch, in his writings has beautiful ideas about this. The luchos are made of stone. Stone is a symbol of, it remains the same. Stone is just stone, doesn't change. So the Torah is like stone, it stays the same. Rav Hirsch talks about the Aron. The Aron was made of gold and wood. It was wood covered by gold. Rav Hirsch explains the Torah is like pure gold. It's perfect, most valuable item in the world. And if you keep the Torah properly, then Am Yisrael will grow and flourish and develop like trees. Like trees are a symbol of growth. They grow, they get big. So that's why the Aron is gold and wood. So this is the idea. The Torah is perfect. The Torah doesn't change, but the curriculum changes based on the needs of the environment. You know, just to give an example, the ideas which Yaakov Avinu had to teach the Shvatim when they were living in Eretz Yisrael weren't exactly the same as what Yosef had to teach Menashe and Ephraim when they were in Mitzrayim. They had a different curriculum. Menashe and Ephraim had to deal with what it meant to be in Mitzrayim. This is Torah Segalus. Well, now, what's the idea of Rav Salavita? The idea is as follows. On Friday night, the custom is we give a bracha to our children. And the bracha we give to the boys is Yisimcha Elkim Kefraim Yuchim Menashe. We mentioned we single out Menashe and Ephraim. Why Menashe and Ephraim? Why dafka them? So the Rav developed the idea that the bracha we say Friday night is the bracha of the Masor. The bracha of the Masor. That we're giving a bracha to our children that no matter what happens in their lives, they should be successful in maintaining and being part of the Masorah. And wherever they happen to end up in life, like Menashe and Ephraim, Menashe and Ephraim symbolize surviving and staying strong in the Masorah, no matter what the outside world brings. So that's the bracha we give to our children, the bracha of the Masorah. That if Menashe and Ephraim could do it anywhere, then no matter what, we want you, our children, to remain in the Masorah. A very beautiful idea. And that's why we choose Menashe and Ephraim when giving the bracha Friday night. I just wanted to add to that. It's my own idea, and later I mentioned it to Rav David, and he thought it was very good. It's striking that the bracha we give to our daughters is Sarif Karacha Baleya. That's what we mentioned. We mentioned the four Yamahos. Very striking that it's not parallel. To the boys, we use two of the Shvatim. And to the girls, we mention the Imamos. Interesting. I mean, now it's true, we don't have the female equivalent of the Shvatim. But it's interesting that to the girls, it's the Imamos, and to the boys, it's the Shvatim. Why? Based on this approach of the Torah Segalus, and especially the approach of the Masorah, of the idea of the Masorah, it fits beautifully. The four Imamos were born and raised in completely terrible environments. Each one of them. They were born from Goyim and raised in terrible environments. So in this sense, the four Imahos are in exact parallel to Menashe and Ephraim. That just like Menashe and Ephraim were raised when all around them the environment was terrible and they somehow succeeded. They had Torah Segalus, the Imahos didn't. But still, the concept of surviving in the Masorah despite the most difficult outside circumstances, applies to the Imahos too. So it works out very well that the bracha to the boys and the bracha to the girls are parallel because they're both examples of surviving even if the environment around isn't so pure. So this is Torah Segalus. And this is the bracha we give to Menashe, to our children, like Menashe and Ephraim, the bracha Friday night, the bracha of the Masorah. Okay. So how does this apply to the writings of the Chafetz Chaim? So here we come to really the major punchline here, the major idea here. And this is on page 3, in source number 3 on page 3, this is Rabbi Yaakov at the very end of his major piece on Torah Segolas. Rabbi Yaakov develops the following idea. And he says as follows. Uve'emes matzinu sheyesh na Torah Eretz Yisrael. Hanu mitzvah tliyas v'aretz. Kamo ken yeshu ana Torah Segolas. Kisham ha'nisyonos acher ve'alocha shomos. So the first thing Rabbi Yaakov says is that the Torah Segolas, literally you have this Torah Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvah tliyas v'aretz. When you're in Eretz Yisrael, you have to learn mitzvah tliyas v'aretz because you have to know what to do. And in Chutz Laaretz, there are other challenges. And in Chutz Laaretz, to learn, especially in the old days, when you know there was much less travel, to learn Mitzvah Tzlius Baritz wasn't as crucial, because you had different challenges in Chutz Laaretz. And then Rabbi Yaakov says, U'kid matzinu shebal chafetz chayim zal, chiber mishna bru l'kol Yisrael, v'shulchan aruch acher l'anshei hatzava b'sefer machane Yisrael. I'll read it again. And we find the Baal Chafetz Chaim, Chiber Mishneh Brura L'Kol Yisroel, V'Shulchan Aruch Acher, V'Anshei HaTzava, B'Sefer Machane Yisroel. The Chafetz Chaim wrote two major halachos farim that talk about day-to-day living. One was the famous Mishneh Brura, and one was the little less famous Machane Yisroel. The Mishneh Brura we know, the Chafetz Chaim wanted to write a Sefer, to help people learn the halachos of Or Chaim, what to do in daily life, waking up in the morning, tzitzis, tefillin, brachos, brachos haShachar, brachos haTorah, davening, all the laws of the Yom Tovim. And he goes through and he explains, we'll get back to this in a few minutes, the ideas in the Mishnah, the ideas in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, and explains everything. And he wrote another sefer called Machane Yisrael. Many Jews were drafted into the Russian army, and they were forced to stay there for many, many, many years, and it was extraordinarily difficult to keep the Torah, keep halachos when you were there. So the Chafetz Chaim wrote a special sefer directed at the soldiers, how to stay strong, how to stay Buddhist, how to keep halacha when you're in the Russian army. Now, and if you compare some of the details of Machane Yisrael and what the Mishnah writes and what the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Mishnah Berurah, they're different. That's exactly Torah Segolas. The Mishnah Berurah was written for Jews living at home, ordinary Jews living in their homes, in their communities. Machane Yisrael, the Jews who were in the army, had such difficulties. It was so hard to keep Shabbos, keep anything. So therefore, some of the details, the Mishnah Berurah writes certain kula, certain shas hadchak. It's a difficult situation. A lot of times in halacha, there's a standard halacha, but the shas hadchak, in a very difficult circumstance, there are opinions that one's allowed to rely on. You want to rely on them in an ordinary situation, but if it's extraordinary, if it's a difficult situation, then sometimes one can rely on other opinions too, that are legitimate opinions within the halacha. And the Mishnah uses those in Machane Yisrael, the Chafetz Chaim, uses those in Machane Yisrael. So this is classic Torah Segolas. So if Yaakov here is starting the ball rolling, that the Mishnah Berurah we see used Torah Segolas, and you see the difference between the Mishnah Berurah and the Sefer Machane Yisrael. Okay, good. But really, it goes further than that. Because not only do we find Torah Segolas in the Chafetz Chaim's writings, comparing the Mishnah Berurah to the Machane Yisrael, but when you think about it, when you go down the list, and it's a very impressive list of Sfarim, when you think about it, the Torah Segolas really is like the theme of the writings of the Chafetz Chaim. It's very interesting. Let's look at the list again. The list of the Sfarim the Chafetz Chaim wrote. It's here, it's page 5. So he wrote the Sefer Chafetz Chaim and Shemiras HaLashon about the laws of Lashon Hara. He saw a need. People just didn't know the laws of Lashon Hara. We'll discuss. We'll learn the introduction. We'll discuss why he wrote to say people were ignorant, or they didn't know the halachos, they didn't care about them enough. He saw a need. Okay. He wrote the Mishnah Berurah. Now, the Mishnah Berurah itself is also an example of Torah Segolas. The Chafetz Chaim saw a need. People have to know what to do. You have a Shulchan Aruch and a Ramah. And you have the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. It's very nice. Yeah, but it's all complicated. From the time the Shulchan Aruch was written, the early 1500s and the Ramah, until the 1900s, in those 400 years, so many commentaries and extra commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the Malnei Avraham and the Taz and the Gra and the Prima Gadim and the Brich Ladar, so many, and you don't know what to do. How do you know what to do? First of all, before the Chafetz Chaim came along, if you wanted to learn Shulchan Aruch in the late 1800s, it was hard to do. It was just difficult because there were so many mefarshim to look at. You know, the boys say when you open up the ordinary Shulchan Aruch, it looks like alphabet soup. There's so many things to look at. There's so many letters. There's a thick letter with parentheses and a small letter with brackets. It's confusing, very confusing. And the Mishnah thought people couldn't learn halacha, even Rabbanim. Unless you are very learned and you learn the Torah and the Beis Hasid, it's too hard to do. So the Chafetz Chaim said, I have to write a sefer where I'm going to learn all of the mafarshim and I'm going to organize it and make it clear that a Talmud Chacham could go through a Shulchan Aruch. And even a person that's actually a big Talmud Chacham, a person wants to look something up, they use my Mishnah Berurah, he read through every single the Rishonim, all the Achronim, the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch, and he organized and he decided which ones we're going to follow and why and presented it. And when you read the Mishnah Berurah, it's relatively easy to learn the Shulchan Aruch. It's a Mishnah Berurah. It's very clear. It's a very clear word, a very clear limud. And now a person can go through the Shulchan Aruch Norma with the Mishnah Berurah and know what to do. So the Mishnah Berurah itself is an example of Torah Segalus when you think about it. Nidchei Yisrael. What is Nidchei Yisrael? That's the sefer he wrote for the Jews in America. The Jews in America were facing challenges. The big immigrations had begun. And the Chafetz Chaim heard reports about the Jews in America facing challenges. And he wrote a sefer directed at them about staying strong in America. Well, he wrote a sefer, Likutei Halachos, 5 volumes. I described briefly last time what exactly is Likutei Halachos. So it's like this. The Rif was one of the classic early Rishonim. The Rif wrote a Perush on the Gemara, where he basically quoted the Halacha L'maisa sections of the Gemara. And he told you the Halacha L'maisa the Pesach. He quoted the basic Machlokas and the bottom line Halacha L'maisa. That's the Rif. So the Rif cuts out a lot of the discussion. That's why it used to be that people said if you want to review a Masechta quickly, just review the Rif. If you review the Rif, you're getting the basics, the basic issues, the basic machlokas and halacha l'maisa, what to do. And it's a way to go through the Masechta, more quickly. I once was giving a shiur, and I spoke all about the Rif and the Rif, and people used to learn the Rif. And there was a boy in the shiur. He got so excited, he decided, it was like a week before, I think it was a week before Purim. So he decided to learn the whole Rif on Masechta Megillah by Purim, and it was very exciting, because you know that's doable. To learn the whole Masechta in a week is hard. To learn the Rif in a week is more doable. Very exciting thing to do. Now the Rif, he skipped all the Agadotas of Shas, the parts of the Gemara that don't talk about halacha, but talk about, you know, like midrashim and stories. And the Rif skipped all of Kachim and Taros, the laws of Karbanos, the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, because most of the laws of Karbanos don't apply nowadays without a Beis Hamikdash, and most of the laws of Tumah V'Tahara don't apply nowadays either. Most. So the Rif skipped all of Kachin. The best place to see this, if you're interested, open up a Gemara Maseches Pesachim. Maseches Pesachim has 10 prakim. So the Rif, if you look in the Rif, he has a commentary on Perek Aleph, Perek Sheni, Perek Shlishi, Perek Revi. That's about Chametz, Bedikas Chametz, what is Chametz, Matzah, Maror, all the basics. The 10th Perek is about Arvei Pesachim, a lot of Halachos of Brachos, and all the laws of the Seder. So if you open up the Rif, you have Perek Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Revi, Asiri. Fascinating. He totally skips Prakim 5 through 9, Perek Hei through Tes. Nothing. You open up the Rif in the back of Maseches Pesachim. After Perek Dal is Perek Yud. Why? Because those 5 Prakim discuss the Karban Pesach. And the Rif skipped the parts that weren't Halacha L'maaseh. Now, the Chafetz Chaim writes in his introduction, Likutei Halachos, you know, we doubt when the Mashiach is going to come. We want Mashiach to come tomorrow, today. Yeah, but if we don't know the laws of Kachim, we're not going to be ready. We're not going to know what to do. So the Chafetz Chaim said, how can we be davening for Mashiach to come? We're not ready for Mashiach to come. So he says, I have to make sure that people know the laws of Kachim. So the Chafetz Chaim wrote a perush along the lines of the Rif on all of the Gemaras, like the Kachim Gemaras, that would be Lamaisa, Bisman, the Beis Mishnah, the laws of Karbanos. Again, that's a need that he felt the people had. We want Mashiach to come, so you have to know what to do. And that's a good halachos. And this is really the idea that runs through the writings of the Chafetz Chaim. This idea that he began with the needs of the people and then decided what to write afterwards. So I sort of thought that this fit, this the idea of Rabbi Yaakov fits with the Chafetz Chaim. And then I found, Baruch Hashem, that if you read the biography of the Chafetz Chaim, so his Talmud, Rav Yosha wrote a beautiful biography of the Chafetz Chaim that was translated and was published by Art School in English, in the art school of Chafetz Chaim, written by Chafetz Chaim's Talmud, Rav Yosha. And he says this, I have a Xerox here on page 3, source 7. This is from the biography of the Chafetz Chaim. And he writes as follows. And Rav Yosha now, the Chafetz Chaim Talmud, is contrasting two different ways people approach writing Svarim. A book is the product of the author's mind, the outcome of his emotions and thoughts. In effect, it is an expression of his conceptions and a concretization of his perceptions. He studies and learns, seeks and probes according to his own tastes and personal inclinations. When he succeeds in discovering something novel, he will neither rest nor be content until he is able to convey his findings to others. This is human nature. And there's nothing wrong with that. One way to write a sefer is, you're learning, you develop chedushim, and you want to share them with others. A person is supposed to share his chedushei Torah. That's what you're supposed to do. So a person is learning through shas, learning different hosts. Svarim, he has chedushim, he wants to share it with others. That's one approach to writing svarim. There's nothing wrong with that. That's one approach to writing svarim. But that wasn't the Chafetz Chaim's approach. He didn't start from, he develops his own chedushim, and now let's spread it further. No, rather, what did he do? Our young author was different. Neither was his desire to write a sacred book motivated by an inner drive to reveal his heart's feelings and thoughts. Rather, with him, everything was considered and precisely planned out in advance. This is the key sentence. He initially ascertained what the people needed, and then he created it for them. He initially ascertained what the people needed, and then he created it for them. That's Torah Sagos. In fact, he wrote many books and prepared many manuscripts, but only published those he considered most essential. So I think that this beautiful piece here, it's page 83 and 84 in the biography of the Chafetz Chaim. This is the Chafetz Chaim. He started from, what do the people need? I live in a generation. What curriculum do they need? He went through Lashon Hara and Chesed and the Mishnah Berurah and why the Mishnah Berurah is Torah Sagos and Gutei Halachos down the line. This is what the Chafetz Chaim, this was his approach to writing Sfarim. He started from the needs of the people and then presented the Sfarim on those topics. So I think if you view it this way, Rabbi Yaakov's beautiful development, this essay, this Yesod, that runs through all of Chumash Bereishis, from the end of Bereishis to Vayichi, really becomes the introduction to the writings of the Chafetz Chaim in general, and our Sefer in particular. This is the idea of Torah Sagos. We're going to see, Bezat Hashem, that there's one way, that the way the Chafetz Chaim presents it, this will get to Bezat Hashem next week, that the Sefer Chafetz Chaim might become the ultimate Torah Sagos. Because the Chafetz Chaim is going to develop the idea that we're in Golos now. We want Hashem to rebuild. We want to end the Golos. We want to do what we can to help end the Golos. Rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. The Chafetz Chaim is going to develop the idea that basically the primary thing we can do to help bring back the Beis Hamikdash, take a guess, correct, speak less Lashon Hara and work on Lashon Hara. So the Sefer Chafetz Chaim becomes not just a Sefer how to survive when you're in Golos, but it becomes a Sefer of how to do our best to end the Golos totally and go back to Eretz Yisrael. So in a sense, in a very real sense, it becomes the ultimate Torah Sagos that we can use just to help survive and ultimately end the Golos and go back and have the Beis Hamikdash b'yamin. Oh. So this is the introduction to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim to the writings of the Chafetz Chaim. Okay. Now, we have a few minutes, so I want to just develop the next topic when we begin the actual Hakdama of the Chafetz Chaim, the introduction, and the Haskamas to a Sefer. It's a very long topic. So I want to use the next few minutes, again, as part of this introduction as follows. Basically, we have three goals in learning the Sefer Chofetz Chaim. First of all, to learn the halachos, to learn the Sefer. We'll be learning the Sefer, with, you know, going through many of the ideas, with many of the footnotes, some of the footnotes, in some places many of the footnotes. Number one. Number two, of course, to speak less Lashon Hara. That's certainly a major goal of learning the Sefer. We should all work on our Shemiras HaLashon. That's when you learn the Sefer. And that we'll discuss with Be'ez Hashem next week, that those two goals go together. The third goal, and this is what I mentioned at the beginning of the first lesson, the first year, the third goal is that it's going to affect our lives in general. When people become more careful with the laws of Lashon Hara, it affects them way beyond the details of the Averos, way, way beyond. I mentioned one example last class, the whole idea of being a more positive person, seeing the positive in people, seeing the positive in things around you, being able to thank Hashem more for things. Life isn't perfect, but it can still be very wonderful, etc. Well, I just want to mention another example or two along those lines, just examples to understand where we're going here, that when you keep the laws of Lashon Hara, it changes everything. It changes your life. It changes your neighborhood. It changes everything. So the Rav of the shul I daven in Ramat Beit Shemesh, the Rav of the shul his name is Rav Chaim Malinowitz of Shlita. He's one of the main editors of Art School Gemaras, very tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he gives drushas on Shabbos, sermons drushas on Shabbos, very wonderful drushas. So once he spoke about the Lashon Hara, and he made the following point, and it's so precise, and you see it in real life, it jumps out at you. He said he gave the following sentence, which I'll say, then I'll explain. It goes as follows. Rav Malinowitz said that Lashon Hara is the oxygen that turns a small fire into a conflagration. Conflagration means, I guess, a very big fire. Lashon Hara is the oxygen that turns a small fire into a conflagration. And he said as follows. Let's say you live on a block. Average block, 10 families on one side, 10 families on the other side. All right. And two neighbors get into a fight. It happens sometimes. One neighbor wants to expand his house, and the other neighbor, and he didn't ask the other neighbor. And then when he expands his house, it's going to block the shade to his neighbor's garden, or block the sun from his neighbor's garden, or block the sun from his neighbor's patio, and it bothers his neighbor. His neighbor's angry at him, tells him, I don't like what you do, and they're in a fight. And then the first neighbor might say, oh, I don't care, it's legal, so maybe it's not legal, and the second neighbor takes him to court. There's a whole to-do, and they're fighting. Okay. This unfortunately happens. So two neighbors are fighting. Reuven and Shimon are fighting. Okay. Now, if they kept the laws of Lashon Hara, so what happens? So eventually, if you have a neighbor you don't get along with, eventually, I mean, you have to go on with your life. You develop what's called a cold peace. You're not very friendly. You don't share things all the time. But listen, you have to survive. You have to go on with life. So despite the fact that you're annoyed at your neighbor, so you go on with life. And, you know, you get to some working order here where you're going through life and it's annoying. You know, it's nice to have good neighbors and be on friendly terms with the neighbor. It's very nice and pleasant. And you don't have that. It's a shame. But you go on with life and you're able to survive and function. You're able to function properly despite the fact that you have a fight with your neighbor. Okay. So and you're fighting and that's it. Now, but what? Okay. And so this fight shouldn't affect anyone else. It shouldn't affect anything in the neighborhood. It's Reuben and Shimon are fighting. They're in the backyard. They might go to court. They might not go to court. And they don't get along. So what happens? Reuven tells two of his friends on the block. And they agree with him. And Shimon tells two of his friends. And they agree with him. And now everyone takes sides. And now suddenly the whole block is fighting and arguing about Reuven and Shimon's disagreement in the backyard. And you can have an entire block, a whole neighborhood on fire. That's a conflagration, a big fire, all because of Lashon Hara. If Reuven and Shimon kept the laws of Lashon Hara, so then this machlokes, which is a shame, wouldn't affect anyone else. Now we'll see. Reuven's allowed to ask advice from someone. if he can trust the person, he's not going to spread it further. So maybe one other person will know. Reuben will tell one person to ask advice, and hopefully he's careful. Shimon will tell one person. But what happens? Lashon Hara takes the small fire, it's the oxygen. It starts spreading. And this is so true. If neighborhoods in general kept the laws of Lashon Hara, then, okay, people don't get along sometimes, but that's it, then it's over. Lashon Hara is the oxygen that turns small fires into conflagrations. This is a major, major yesod. There are one of its development, it's mamish emes. And you see it in real life, you see what goes on. Sometimes you have to know unpleasant things. You have to know unpleasant things. So the people who have to know. And everyone else, why do they have to know? Why should they get involved? So he always says, Rav Lewis always says to us, you have machlokes with someone, start with the laws of Lashon Hara. Be careful how you say it. Be careful how you ask things. When you come to the Rav to ask a shaila, be careful. And if you start from there, then by definition, you're keeping the machlokes as small as it can be. It's a beautiful example about how keeping the laws of Lashon Hara can affect your whole life. Okay, one more example, and then we'll stop. And this is actually from the Sefer Chofetz Chaim itself. And this example is Sol Lamaisa. We're going to get back to this, Bezos Hashem, in the future. Sol Lamaisa out there in the real world. And it goes as follows. We're going to be discussing Lashon Hara L'Toelus. Sometimes it's mutter to tell someone something they need to know. Right? If Sar and Rifka are friends, and Sarah knows something which would be good for Rifka to know. Because it'll help Rifka deal with an issue. It'll help Rifka protect herself or protect her family. So Sarah, with certain conditions, which Mishnah will be discussing, is allowed to tell Rifka, Lashon Hara, which Rifka needs to know to protect herself, to help herself. That's called Lashon Hara L'Toelus. But what if Rifka is not careful? Rifka is, I don't know, a blabbermouth, whatever word people use. She talks all the time. Rivka's not careful with Lashon Hara. So if Sarah tells Rivka what she thinks she has to tell her, Sarah's afraid Rivka will tell the whole world, and Rivka will tell people, and Sarah will be very embarrassed. So what happens? Sarah doesn't tell Rivka. She's not supposed to tell her. This is in the Chofetz Chaim in Hilchos Rechilus, in Klal Tes, footnote Hey. He says, Imakir estiva shel zeh shumiyayitzoso. If I'm aware, if I know that your nature is, that the person I'm advising, his nature is, hu b'teva holich recha. He speaks Lashon Hara. He goes around. He's a peddler. He's a blabbermouth. He's always talking about it, whatever's on his mind. He's not careful shmir selashon. V'yefarsim hadavar l'kol. And this guy who I'm telling is going to tell everyone that I told him this. Right? If I'm, let's say, Sarah's going to warn Rivka, you know, you should be careful around Rachel, for whatever the reason. Whatever. That's what Sarah wants to tell her. Rivka's going to tell everyone what Sarah told her. She'll tell Rachel. Sarah's going to be hurt. Rachel's going to say, Sarah, why did you attack me? Why did you do this? Ayudeze, Yachel, Lovel, Maholos, Kedola, etc. La'anashin, Ka'egu, Hochel, Rachel, Nira, She'ein, L'saper, Lehem, Shum, Inyan. You don't tell them things. And this line of the Chofetz Chaim is quoted by all the present poskim. If you're a Lashon Hara speaker, this is unbelievable, this is so important, this is real life. If you're a Lashon Hara speaker, then people won't tell you things that you need to know for yourself, for your children. You have a child in sixth grade. Something's happening in the grade that's affecting the children. And you want to know so you can help protect your own child. So let's say Sarah knows what's happening. She's one of the mothers. And Rivka's also a mother. But Rivka's a big blabbermouth. And if Sarah tells Rivka, so Sarah's afraid that Rivka will tell everyone that Sarah told her. So Sarah's not going to tell Rivka. Sarah has no obligation to hurt herself in trying to protect Rivka. That's what the Chofetz Chaim is saying. If I tell someone something, and if I tell this person something, he's going to tell so many people, it's going to rebound back against me and hurt me. I have no obligation to help him at my own expense to hurt myself. This is real life. If you have a reputation that you speak Lashon Hara and you speak Rechilus and you're not careful how you talk to people and about people, then people won't tell you things you need to know, and it's unfair. It's unfair. It's unfair for your family. But that's the halacha. That's your stuck. The earlier a person develops a reputation, I'm careful who I speak to. I'm careful how I speak. People know that if you hear something, it stops by you. Unless there's a very specific halachic reason to go further, then they'll tell you things they need to know. This happens in real life. This happens in real life. I know examples. If a person is known to be a Lashon Hara speaker, people will be very nervous to tell her things she needs to know. And who loses out? She loses out, unfortunately. Maybe her family loses out. This is how Lashon Hara goes way beyond the mitzvahs and the averos. It affects your whole life. This klal tes, a footnote hey in Rechilas, is so important. I can't tell you in real life, with friends, with family, with children, it affects your whole life. So this is where we're going here. We have three goals in learning the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Number one, learn the halachos, learn them carefully, understand them. Number two, speak less Lashon Hara, certainly. And number three, understand how it affects everything about our lives, so many areas. Being a more simpatica person, it affects neighborhoods, it affects this, helping yourself, helping your family. These are some of the goals that we have, Bezrat Hashem, in learning the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Next week, Bezrat Hashem, we're going to begin reading through the Hakdama of the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, and we're going to start with, actually, fasting, beautiful Divrei Torah, in the Haskamos that the Chafetz Chaim received for his Sefer. There are some beautiful Divrei Torah that relate directly to the Sefer in the Haskamos from the other Gedolim about the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. And we'll be starting that next week. Okay, we'll stop here.